Hey, Michelle, how's it going?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Long day for you, huh?
Pretty long day. Yeah, how'd you know?
Well, because it's late.
It is late. And, a lot. Everything got switched around this week, so everything's like a day ahead. Doing this podcast will be the fifth podcast this week. I mean, not so far, but in total this week, so.
Well, that's no big deal. There's 5 days. Five work days.
Yeah. It doesn't work like that, though. They're not spread out quite like that. But it's okay. It's really good and fun. It's neat that, that everything's kind of starting back and everything. And this one's exciting for me. I've never done a Saul podcast, but it's going to look a little bit suspect because last night on Mike and my Walking Dead podcast on Tribal Rant, we really promoted to our two listeners the Better Call Saul podcast, and I talked to you and Jamie up the whole time.
Oh, thanks. Were they in your living room on your couch watching you do the podcast?
No. They're like somewhere else. I mean, like real live listeners. Yeah. But it's funny because I talked up the podcast so much and everything, and then now it's me. So that was unintentional. I did not know I was going to be doing this until just a couple hours ago.
Well, Jamie couldn't do the podcast today, and I can't do it tomorrow, and it's going to be late in the week, and then all these other podcasts are coming out, so I really wanted to get ours out, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's, if you're not on schedule, sometimes it can really mesh up. Better Call Saul's good. I hope I can hold my own with you here.
You will. You've watched all the Breaking Bad. You watched all the Better Call Sauls, haven't you?
I did. I did watch them, but I didn't watch them to podcast, which is a little bit different.
You don't need to watch them to podcast.
Okay.
I think Better Call Saul can compete with Breaking Bad on the level of TV, important and interesting TV to watch. I think they got this dialed in, and these guys we know have the talent to do it. And I think with some time, they're going to plot this out to be as good as Breaking Bad.
I certainly think it can go in that direction. I hope they take it that way. I always get nervous that they're going to do something different with it. But so far, I completely agree.
Well, Michelle, I want to thank some of my our co-podcasters in the world of podcasting, my friends at the Better Call Saul podcast, who with you, I think in one of our Scathing Tweets podcasts or one of our other podcasts, I kind of ripped them a little bit because I bought an ad space on their show, and I said, they kind of screwed up the ad. They've done like an ad every single show of their, it was like not that expensive to do, and they've done an ad like every single show, and they've dialed it in for me. So it's really a great value. They're talking about my podcast on their show now like every time.
Oh, so that's great.
They're really cool guys, yeah.
I can't wait to listen to it.
Hopefully we'll get together and we'll do another co-podcast with them because Dave and Brian are really, really nice guys, and they got a really fun podcast. And they have a Better Call Saul podcast, of course, the Better Call Saul podcast.
Well, right, and it's better, so.
They were joking about it because when Jamie and I interviewed them, or we kind of co-interviewed each other, they were making fun of this one. There's this one website that was up like 6 months before Better Call Saul even started. Like those bastards were trying to get in on it before its show even aired. And it was my web. It was my. They didn't know it was me when they were talking to me. And so after about 10 minutes of talking, they realized, like, wait a minute, that must have been your podcast that we were making fun of.
That's funny.
But I like people when you can make fun of them and then they can make fun of you and you kind of just laugh together about it. And you don't hang up and go, God, those bastards.
Well, and really that's like a backhanded insult. It's like you're so much on your game that you had it that far ahead of time. So it would be kind of hard to be really upset over that.
Well, Michelle, this is 201 Switch is the name of the Better Call Saul Season 2 premiere episode. And this is the Better Call Saul podcast on the West Coast Project. After naming all these other shows, I forgot my own name. The West Coast Project Network for Better Call Saul. So, Michelle, this show had a number of links to other shows and to Breaking Bad in it. Did you catch some of the connections to the Breaking Bad series and to some other shows?
I caught just a couple of things, not a lot though. So
I caught five.
Oh wow!
And
okay.
Maybe more that I was like, am I just looking at this too closely? You know, am I just picking this apart and looking for every little thing? But there's five pretty clear ones.
Okay.
So it starts out with a flash forward. Jimmy Saul Gene, I guess his name is Gene at the Cinnabon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's working at the Cinnabon. Now, Michelle, what do you think of the proportion of work to money that he makes comparing the Cinnabon store to when he was Saul? When he was Saul laying on the floor of that office with his feet in the foot massager, getting 17% for laundering millions of dollars, what do you think he was making compared to being the manager of the Cinnabon where he has to take out the garbage at, you know, 10 p.m. every night after working all day?
Yeah, I don't think he's making anything where he is now. But doesn't he look perfect in that role? I mean, down to the hairstyle and the eyeglasses and everything about it. Would you ever question that was like his life's work?
And the mustache. He looks like an Omaha Cinnabon. You know, they really go to Omaha to video that, to film that. The restaurant they were in this show... They were talking to the Bart on the Insider podcast, the Saulcast or whatever they call it, Talking Saul, not Talking Saul, but the Insider one that Vince Gilligan does.
Yeah.
They were talking about being at the bar in Omaha where the bartender knew like, Warren Buffett and all that. It's another good podcast. Those guys are pretty funny. They stray off the episode a lot, but they have some interesting insider stuff. But Saul's at the Cinnabon, and he gets locked out, putting the garbage out. Doesn't put the stopper in the door the right way. And Michelle, he's afraid to call the police. He really values his freedom, and he thinks that any little hint of the police sniffing around, I mean, how could that possibly get him in trouble, right? What would the Omaha City Police worry about letting a poor Cinnabon manager back through his door?
Well, and it's not even like they're going to be there as soon as he goes through anyway, and he works in the mall. It could just be I locked myself in there. Yeah, I wasn't really sure unless... Now, he was put in witness protection, right? Or no?
No, it was
did he
disappeared.
Just left? Oh, okay. I couldn't remember if he, at the end, if he went in witness protection or if he just went away.
No, he went away. Remember he's in the basement of the Disappearer's vacuum store?
Okay, that's who it was, yeah. Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was that or if it was a witness protection program. But yeah, you're right. So I guess the whole idea of just the police in any instance was enough to, I mean, it was obviously enough to scare him bad enough to sit there for a couple hours.
Well, what's the difference between the police letting him back? He's got the frickin' Cinnabon uniform on. He's in the Cinnabon's garbage bin area.
Right.
What's the difference between a cop walking in for a cup of coffee through the front door at 3 in the afternoon and seeing his face and going, wait a minute, you look like that guy that's on the APB.
Yeah.
You know, what's the difference? I think Seppenwall said it, that he's in the same jail. He told Walt at one point, just go in and turn yourself in. It's the best thing for you to do. It's the safest. It'll free your mind, if nothing else. Because he's in prison in the Cinnabon. If he's afraid to call the police to let him through a locked door.
Yeah, well, I mean, he didn't even have to just open the door, you know. But, I mean, I'm sure it would video who he was. But that's all. It wasn't even like anything else. I don't know. But that's a good point. And you bring it up about what he told Walt, because, yeah, he is, you're right. He's in his own kind of prison.
And they hammer it home. They show him going out the door at 9:20, and then it's like two and a half hours later, 11:45 or so, before the next janitor comes and opens and he just gets out of it. But my first callback, Michelle, to another part of Breaking Bad was that milk crate that he sat on. That milk crate reminded me of Jesse's milk crate when he was in that cell with Jack's crew and Todd keeping him in that pit. Yeah, the milk crate he stood on to get up and jump up.
That's a good one, yeah.
It's a little bit different looking. It was a little bit bigger, but he sat on a milk crate that just reminded me of that. Just reminded me of Jesse being in that cell. And then when you scratch his name on the wall, it's a little bit, here's number two, reminded me a little bit of Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
SG was here, Brooks was here on the ceiling.
Sure was.
Do you think there's any possible tracking of that, Michelle? SG on the wall that's scratched in there. That's, I mean, who would ever get back there to look at it? But it is somewhat permanent for a guy who's worried so much that he won't go through the emergency door.
Right. Yeah, there was a whole lot written on that wall and scratched into it, too. I kept looking at the marker on the wall because it was much more prominent, and then they focused in on the SG was here. SG could be anybody. I can't possibly imagine that could come back on him unless he uses it in some way later on to prove something. But
well, it's not one thing. It's kind of a series of things that might go wrong to catch him. Like the face. The face might not be enough, but then there's the SG on the wall, and then there's, you know, maybe a couple of other little breadcrumbs he leaves behind.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, why do you think he did it? Why did he scratch it in the wall?
I think he misses Saul. Don't you? I think he wants to still be Saul, and he's not Saul, he's Gene. And Gene looks like a sad character, and a particularly sad character compared to the life Saul lived.
Maybe that's SG, sad Gene.
Maybe it is. Maybe that's what he meant. Good.
All right, Michelle, we go to real time. Saul or Jimmy, I guess we'll call him Jimmy for here. He's okay. Kind of nervous about a meeting that Kim and Howard have set up with him with Clifford Maine. Clifford Maine, the big lawyer that they're trying to help him get a job with.
Yep.
And Michelle, Clifford Maine is Ed Begley Jr. I've met Ed Begley Jr.
Have you really?
In my electric car days.
Aw, that's neat.
Yeah, I sat in a car with him in Washington, D.C., driving around. We were doing something for electric cars on the Capitol Hill.
You've he's just like, rubbed so many elbows. Car. Yeah.
he's a greenie. He's like it's like a lot of the Hollywood greenies. But Jimmy pulls Kim aside and asks her some pretty important personal stuff. If I take this job, is this going to happen? This meaning this whatever this is between him and her.
Right.
Pretty interesting stuff, because we've always kind of seen that they've been attracted to each other, or at least had a friendship. But this is big time stuff. He's kind of scared to ask the question, but then it seems to rattle her too. She stops and gets a little shocked for a second and is like, she thinks about it.
But she looks uncomfortable even answering that, and he looked relieved, and I wasn't real sure how that was going to go. Of course,
yeah, know, but that, but they back it up with having that relationship later,
right?
In the episode,
right.
So it's interesting. Their nervousness around each other kind of implies that there is attraction there, because she's not just like disdainfully looking at him. Oh, come on, get out of here with that. You know, she's nervous. She doesn't want to answer it wrong and hurt his feelings, and maybe she doesn't want to discourage him from thinking if you take this job, then we absolutely have to stop seeing each other. I don't know. It was an interesting little interaction, and they both really played it off well.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
I have a good feeling about this show. When I watch Bob Odenkirk and Race Seahorn, I like them. I like watching them together, and it kind of makes me feel good. Like, oh, this is kind of a feel-good watching these two be together.
Yeah, it is. And then I have to remember that I know the future. You know, they show us the future when they start it, which kind of makes it sad, right? Because,
well, yeah, I guess, but it's feel-good time now. I mean, right. Everything's going to, you could be sad about everything if you think about it.
I guess, yeah. I don't know. I just, every time I get really excited for him or think, okay, this could really be something, I think, no, because I know it's not. Because even, not just now, not just knowing it's not with Gene, but we know it wasn't with Saul even. So just, you know, 6 short years, it's not. I don't know. That makes me kind of feel bad. But it also makes me really curious as to where this is going to go, because we do know that it does have a stopping point. So that kind of makes it interesting too, to me.
Well, it was just interesting to watch them interact like that. Then he turns around and declines Ed Begley's offer. Clifford's offer. He doesn't want to pursue the job. And then he drives away. Michelle and Mike lets him out with no charge. Mike, who would charge him for just turning around in the parking lot last year.
Yep.
Lets him go with no charge. They're looking like they're pals.
Well, I mean, they did share that that little job that they did together. So
they talk a little bit, and Jimmy reminisces about the $1.6 million they had right in front of them. If they split it 50-50, $800,000 each. And Mike doesn't seem to lament this too much. Mike is calm and cool and fairly even keeled. He's pretty philosophical about his life here. He's just calmly doing his crossword puzzles. You know, and his theory about all this is, well, I was hired to do a job and I did it. That's it. That's the end of it. Why worry about it?
Right. Yeah, well, and he's has such integrity, especially considering his line of work. He has, like, such integrity that he doesn't even allow himself to think about what if I would have kept that money or anything, unlike Saul, as you see.
Well, Jimmy's got a little pep in his step here. His spirit seems to soar a little bit. He's kind of rejoicing with smoke on the water as he drives his car over to the nail salon office. And he's got a lot of confidence now.
Yep.
He goes right in. He's all peppy. Like, hey, ladies, throw a frisbee. Go outside and have some fun. He's like breathing some air into their lives in this stuffy nail salon.
He is.
And then he guzzles the cucumber water right out of the spigot.
He does do that. Yep. He drinks from the free-flowing spout as he gets chastised for pouring himself a little cup. So that was pretty
cucumber waters for customers. He wouldn't even drink a cup of it before.
Right.
It's a free spirit. He's done this. Whatever he's done, he's broken free from something that's been hammering him down. So it's kind of fun to watch this. But Michelle, it looks like he's shutting down the James McGill empire here. He takes the little computer ribbon sign off the door and starts taking apart his office.
Yep.
All right, Michelle, so number three, the callback number three, Mike in the garage waiting for his bodyguard job. That's the garage where they put the bomb on Gus's car and Walt watched it from across the way.
Yeah, wasn't it, though? I mean, because that's what I thought. I thought it was the same place.
Yeah, exactly the same place. And, yeah. And it was just the same railing almost that they looked over when Gus peered over across the street and Walt was ducked down.
Right.
That was a callback, I think, to that very scene.
Right.
And our buddy pulls up, Price pulls up in his new Hummer too, spinners all over it in a yellow car. And, of course, yellow is my callback number four. That's Jesse's early colors from Breaking Bad. The early colors of yellow and the license plate are the callback number four that I noticed.
Oh, how bright and colorful was that? I mean, could he just, like, paint a sign on himself?
Yeah, and this guy isn't 1 year out of high school as a kind of a dropouty loser. He's an IT. He's about to be in, like, mid-30s at the youngest.
Right.
He's running around in bright orange, bright yellow tennis shoes and a bright yellow Hummer with flames and spinners on it.
Flaming fluorescent Hummer with the license tag that says Playa.
Yep.
How funny.
So Mike, again, calmly, Mike is acting really super calmly. He rejects going into that atrocious Hummer. And the guy selling the pills, Price, is really mad, starting to get mad now. Like, I'm paying you three times as much as I should be, and you're, you know, only one guy, and you're getting the pay of three guys. So he fires him. Mike won't get in, and he says, okay, you're fired, and he goes off without him. And, of course, his meeting with Nacho to sell the drugs, Nacho immediately takes care of this situation, which is kind of funny in that little scene where Nacho makes fun of the car, but he has his own ostentatious, like, gold chain, big, heavy gold chain. He doesn't look like a guy just doing a normal job either. If somebody were to see him on the street, he looks like he's got a little bit more cash than he probably should.
Well, but at least he's driving the, you know, beat up van. I mean, the van's not going to get any attention. It's not going to draw attention from down the road like this Daniel Wormald's car is. It's crazy.
Unless you're a Scooby-Doo fan, because I think that's the Scooby-Doo van that Nacho's driving in.
You know, I really do like those Scooby-Doo vans, but personal thing.
But Price talking up his Hummer, you can have girls in a bikini and girls in a parka, and they can sit in two different climate control areas of that car, Michelle.
So what more could you want?
Probably you want to keep your glove box locked.
Maybe, yeah.
Because Nacho looks in there and finds his address. And there's a little bit of mystery to that. We'll have to decipher that when we get to it. But first, we're going to see Jimmy in the pool.
yep.
He's got himself set up. He's got the chips floating on the kickboard, the drink in the cup holder, and the cell phone in the baggie floating next to his little floating chaise lounge.
He does. A flip phone in a Ziploc. That was so funny.
And he takes a call, and then Kim meets him, and he invites her in for a one-piece bathing suit party. Nothing too outrageous. Go into the gift shop and get a one-piece and hop in the pool with me, baby. And she's like, forget it. Meet me at the bar. Don't take long. I'm only going to be in there for a second.
It didn't take him long to get out of that lazy river pool either when she says that.
He goes into the bar and he has a drink with Kim. And they immediately reject. I guess we're at callback number five.
Is
the tequila, the Don Eladio poison tequila gift.
Yeah.
That Gus gave Don Eladio, the Zafiro Anejo. $50 a shot, yep. Michelle.
That's steep.
You only drink $50 tequila on the weekends, right?
Well, yeah.
And Jimmy's wearing a pinky ring that I know he's worn earlier in this episode. I wasn't paying much attention to the pinky ring, but Kim notices it for the first time.
Didn't he get it from Marco? Or am I remembering that wrong?
I have no idea where he got it or when he started wearing it.
I thought he got it from Marco. Remember when he went back to Chicago and he was getting back into that stuff last season? For some reason, I'm remembering that he got it from him. I don't know if he got it off of his dead body.
Maybe.
When he died.
It had to be a place and time away from Kim because she hasn't noticed it before.
Right.
And maybe that's helping us as the audience. Like, she's noticing it, so we're noticing, oh, yeah, that's the ring you got from Marco. I don't remember it as well as you do.
Well, I don't know if I do or not, but it's almost like his, he puts it on. I kind of took it as his Slippin' Jimmy persona thing. That's like his Slippin' Jimmy outfit.
It's his cape.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Well, he tells Kim he's been striving to please Chuck, and this has not made him very happy, and now he's going to live life for himself, Michelle. People tell me now that how they really see me, and it's not as a lawyer. And he's kind of going to go by this philosophy, but she's not happy about this. She kind of reminds him that, you know, you worked really hard to become a lawyer, and don't just throw it away.
Right.
All right, next call back is Ken. Ken Wins. Do you remember that guy from Right Away, from Breaking Bad? He's the guy that pulled up and cut the lady off in the gas station, and Walt put the squeegee on his battery and blew up his car.
Oh, I don't remember. I didn't remember that. Now, is it the same guy?
Yeah, when Walt was getting the money from the savings and loan to buy the RV.
Right.
He was like he had his earpiece in then too, Ken did, and he was like, this girl, you should see this girl in line at the teller. She's got audacious tits and...
Right, he was being obnoxious
in front of everybody in line. And that's Ken, and that he had the license plate Ken Wins on his car.
Oh, perfect.
And he's now at the bar being a stockbroker, kind of a dickhead. Short it. He's telling whoever he's talking to on the phone that stock's a piece of crap. He should short it and get out of it and make money by selling it short. Super negative dude, but he's funny as hell. He gotta give him that. But Kim keeps on at him that he's kind of an idiot for not at least trying for Jimmy, not at least trying the job at Davis and Maine. He brings up the sunken cost fallacy, and it's funny, Michelle. You and I have talked about this before.
We have. I couldn't remember which podcast. Wasn't it on a Fargo or True Detective?
Can't remember. Couple of years.
Yeah, it's been a long time, but I actually noted that.
Did you remember what it is?
Yeah. Where you have to kind of cut your losses. You don't stick with something just because you've stuck with it in the past.
Right. I'm starting a new diet, but I still got that half gallon of chocolate mint ice cream. I got to finish that because otherwise it's wasted.
Right.
It's like that's the sunken cost fallacy. You should just throw it away and do whatever's best for you right now.
Right.
Don't stay in the in the financial situation because you're already in it, but because you're in it and you need to ride it out, get out of it, get into something better. Don't go ahead with the sunken costs you already have. And Jimmy has that philosophy about what Kim is trying to tell him, that there's no reward at the end of this game I'm in. It's just gotten me nowhere. I'm going to get out of it. And this was kind of insulting to Kim because it impugns her. She's a lawyer, and he's saying a lawyer is kind of a crappy job. I don't like it. I don't know why anyone would like it.
Right. And she's offended.
She's a lawyer, and she's a good lawyer, and she's trying to help him, and she wants good things for him. And then they hear Ken in the background a little bit. On your audio, Michelle, did you hear all the stuff Ken was saying in his comments, snarky comments at the bar?
Yeah, I mean, I could hear him. I didn't take any particular note of anything, but I could tell that he was being very obnoxious.
Well, they hear him enough to decide to do a fun scam on him.
Right.
And Kim essentially becomes Marco for a few minutes as his sister in this little scam.
Right.
So Jimmy jumps right in and says, hey, you sound like you're talking about finances and money. Is there a limit someone can invest in the stock market?
Right.
Simpleton questions.
Sure.
Even if it's an inheritance. And then he kind of leads them and sucks them into this fact that they may have some money that, will totally get Ken's attention. And he becomes much friendlier as he turns on the schmooze. Ken thinks he has a couple of fish on the line here. And they have $1.4 million at stake. And so he invites them over for a drink at the booth, and we re-enter Zafiro Anejo. Kim even amps this up and suggests it, that they get that tequila. And I think when that happens, that's when Jimmy knows she's totally in on the caper.
She's not only in on it, but I think this is where he is like, I mean, because we thought he was into her before, but this was like, that really seemed to ramp that up too. You could tell that he was impressed.
Yeah, she creates the story. I mean, you could find all these little flashbacks, like, is this Skylar talking about Walt's gambling and creating a little story? You know, I'm going to quit numbering all these, but she comes up with the story that they're Victor and Giselle St. Clair from South African Boers, and their Uncle Humphrey died, and she has this whole story, like, created in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable and easy, and she was as good at it as Jimmy.
Right. So they have this little interaction, and while they're drinking tequila the whole time at $50 a shot, they polish off the bottle, and Ken insists that he pays the bill as they sign their little contract. Now, I thought it was funny, Michelle, that they have all of his info, but he doesn't have any of their real info.
No, but how would you know? I mean, people take your word for that.
Yeah, but I mean, even as you, if they signed a contract, do you think they went through all the I'm Giselle St. Clair, I'm at 123 Elm Street in Albuquerque. Do you think they filled all that in, or did they just sign it? It looks like they just signed it.
Right. Well, I mean, that's what it looked like, but you picture him getting more information on them than that. I don't know.
No, I don't think they do, though, because the implication is, we got away with it. All we got to do is leave before he finds out about the bill. And he throws the contract in the garbage.
Yeah.
It's just a signature. I mean, they signed Giselle and Victor, and that's it. And that's all Ken has on them.
Well, even if they put an address, it wouldn't be their address. I mean, everything about the whole setup was a scam, so.
Right. So Ken looks at the check and kind of cringes, and Ken wins, Ken loses. Ken loses on this one.
Bad.
So his interactions with our Breaking Bad heroes have been not good for Ken. Walt ruined his BMW, and these guys had to stiff him with a bill that big would have been $3,500 for a bottle.
Well, yeah, because they finished that whole bottle, brought her the decorative top to it as a souvenir because it was so much. So, yeah, that was a steep bill. But you couldn't feel too bad for Ken, right? Because he's so obnoxious.
Well, he still probably thinks he's got some access to their $1.4 million. He's going to find out later.
Right.
You know, he's not going to, just because he got a big bill, so what? They're in a nice restaurant. They drink a nice liqueur. You know, he's going to find out later. That should be another interaction that'll probably be pretty funny.
Right.
But, yeah, so they laugh, and Jimmy and Kim walk out, and they have their first real romantic moment. And we see that kind of in the toothbrush scene at Kim's house the next morning.
Yeah. I like that.
I like that scene too. I noticed Kim was wearing a Kansas City Royals jersey. So it's interesting that she came from somewhere in the Midwest, or she likes the Kansas City Royals for some reason. And Jimmy wants to use her toothbrush. She won't let him. So they have kind of a romantic, funny, little sarcastic interlude here. And Jimmy brushes his teeth with her finger, which that doesn't ever work. Michelle, have you ever tried that camping or something?
Of course. Yeah, you can't do that. That doesn't work.
Or try to brush your dog's teeth with your finger.
It doesn't work.
And then they do admire that Anejo cap. And Jimmy says, wouldn't it be great if we could do it every night? Or she says it. Can't remember. One of them say it, but the other one agrees. So they both kind of agree that it was a fun caper.
Yeah. But she's ready to get on with her day. She's ready to get back to Kim, the attorney.
Yep. And she asks him if he has something to do, somewhere to go. Are you going to be okay? And
she wanted him to leave with her.
Well, her house.
I know. She didn't want to leave him there.
I didn't get that so much. I think she was just worried, like, what are you going to do with your life now? What are you going
to
do?
No, I don't think so. I thought she didn't want to look, because she's like, you ready? You good? I mean, she kept on. She wanted him to walk out with her.
Maybe. So he wouldn't go through, like, her underwear drawer or something?
Maybe. I don't know. I thought that was kind of weird. All but, right, I mean, Michelle, I've always thought that was weird. I mean, why would you sleep with somebody that you wouldn't let? I don't know.
I'm interested in what you think about Price now. So the police go after Price, and technically, I guess he's called them to report this baseball card collection theft. but he's pretty sloppy in his setup for this scene. He does need Mike around more than he thinks. he makes a couple big mistakes. He tells him he's working at IT at a drug company, so they can kind of see there's drugs involved. He's got a Hummer in the driveway that you have to be pretty affluent to have in the first place.
Well, then it just doesn't fit with anything else to do with him or his house or his Mickey Mantle baseball cards. I mean, none of that stuff even goes together.
The TV and the computer are still there. They didn't get stolen.
Right.
And then the cappers at the couch is too neat, and then right away they see, couch. Not the pillows even were perfect on the couch.
Well, and you could tell where that love seat had been scooted out, because there was all the trash in the floor was scooted back in this perfect line.
So
where someone had
was going on there.
Well, he pointed out that he had some cash stolen, and they asked him how much cash, and he kind of backed up on it. So maybe that's where he put his cash, because I was going to ask you, but I just guessed that maybe that's where he kept his cash hidden, and so he got down there to look.
Maybe, but don't you think that he moved whatever was in that wall, that he moved it away?
Well, maybe. Maybe that's where he kept the drugs.
Yeah, cash and drugs. Than anything else. He moved it away. He's trying to get the cops involved so that they look for somebody under the benign ruse that it's just a baseball card collection. He didn't want them to go to any other room in the house. He wanted them to stay in that room. It was really weird, though. Like, what was his strategy there? It kind of went over my head.
See, I thought he really wanted them to go look for his baseball collection. Am I wrong on that?
Well, I think he wants them to find Nacho. I don't know, though, because how does he know it's Nacho?
Yeah, I wouldn't think he would think it was Nacho. See, I thought he just is missing. He seemed very sincere the way he was talking about these baseball cards. If they're exposed to humidity or if they are bent or it only takes minutes to drop them down.
That's a trick to get them to go after. Somebody robbed his house. Nacho got his address and robbed him.
Right.
So,
did he?
I think so. And so he amped it all up and wrecked the living, you know, what's his name did? Price wrecked his own living room and messed it all up and took whatever else he had out of the stash part of the wall, because something got stolen probably by Nacho, and maybe Nacho found the stash part of the wall. I don't know. There's a lot of mystery to this little scene.
Okay, I took him completely at face value. I thought he was just stupid enough that somebody did that and took his baseball cards. I believed him, so I have no idea.
Then why the whole scene with Nacho knowing his address?
Because we know that it was Nacho that came in, but I don't know that
Nacho doesn't want his baseball cards.
Absolutely not. So I don't know what else was going
money.
On.
He's got money. He's got a lot of money. He's got drugs and money.
Sure, but
the Nacho just came right to his house and stole the money right back that he just paid him for those drugs.
But why would he take the baseball cards?
The guy, he didn't take them, Michelle. That's the trick that Price is trying to. Price wants the police to get after the guy for the money, but he can't say my drug money got stolen. He's just saying, hey, I had a crime committed here. I want you to find who did it.
Yeah, but he's asking them to do things like check pawn shops and investors for baseball cards. And why would he be asking?
Well, they're probably
going to
check for fingerprints, and you know, maybe they'll find Nacho.
Maybe.
I don't know, but it's not. It's either. Still unclear to me, so I'm not going to pretend I know what's going on there. One interesting thing about the pennant that he had for the one of the baseball teams is a Chicago Cubs pennant, which is where Jimmy's from. Pretty weird. And one of those cops was one of the cops who tried to help Skyler when Walt crashed back at the house and she wanted to get rid of him.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat. Wow, they really did go back on this, didn't they?
So I don't know if that's 6 or 7. So the cops do find that little stash area, and then they keep it quiet. They don't turn around to him and say, okay, sir, what's this hole in the wall? This looks like it might be a clue that we should follow. They keep that quiet from him because they don't believe his story.
Right.
There's all kinds of deception going on here.
Yeah.
Somebody probably out there probably knows what's going on. Maybe they can write in and tell us. Jimmy's back at the pool again now, Michelle. Now, he calls somebody because he sees the water buffalo and his hottie girlfriend. Or actually calls somebody. Then the water buffalo and the hottie girlfriend come by Jimmy. And he calls that person back. Who do you think that was?
I thought he was calling Kim. Hmm. I thought that's who he was calling, right? Because then he wanted her to come to him. And then he was like sitting there realizing she wasn't going to continue to do that. But I don't know. That's just what I thought.
I thought maybe Mike. Because why would he call Kim to pluck money out of a water bottle? He's essentially saying to the person he's calling, I've got a mark here that's going to be easy to rob, easy to scam. Come over and we'll... And maybe if it's Kim, he's saying, come over, we'll have some fun with this. But it looked like he was saying, come over and we can get this guy's money.
Yeah, maybe.
Seemed pretty criminal. So I don't know. I thought maybe Mike, but Mike hasn't really been in on those capers with him yet.
No.
Jimmy says he's the lioness, but it's the species accurate lioness, Michelle. He's afraid he might be misinterpreted there. But it to me, that whole little scene seems like a pretty sharp turn towards criminal behavior. He's only a day or two out of being a lawyer, and already he's thinking about how to scam this guy.
I took this as the very day where he's just left Kim in her apartment. There was no reason to think any other time had passed, as I could tell. So
no, he's just gone right from there to the country club again. He's back in the pool.
Right.
So you think maybe it was just for fun for Kim to come and have some more fun with another doofus guy that we can...
That was my guess. And that then when she didn't answer like on the third time he called or whatever, then he figured, you know, he is not going to have her as a partner in crime. So he doesn't really have a partner in crime. So that's why he decided to go back and take the job, essentially.
Yeah, that's what he does next. He calls Davis in Maine, gets the job. Kind of interesting how he's reintroduced back into this little Davis in Maine world. It's all wordlessly. He sees the suite office, all the amenities and the friendly workers, and just done without words. They just do it with a little bit of music in the background. And he also has the killer slipping skater painting in his office. I mean, that's what I thought it looked like. Remember the twins that were the skateboard guys that faked their injury with the...
I do.
The van.
Yep.
But
yep.
Maybe that wasn't even it. It could have been just a guy growing up out of a potted plant, as a person reaching towards the sky.
Yeah, but it definitely looked like someone had slipped, and slipping Jimmy. I mean, come on, that's perfect.
Yeah.
And what about that assistant who was willing to like, you know, you don't like the art, we can change that out. What can I stock your refrigerator with? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
that's when
everything.
The words start. That was pretty funny. Info on the company car. If you don't like the one here, we can have another one brought in. We can change the artwork. We'll got samples brought in.
Yep.
Like you said, the fridge, we can get everything different in the fridge. I'll get you a humidifier. Jimmy looks kind of befuddled by all this. But, you know, there's probably people that really do this, have that kind of stuff in their office.
In That's just life. Incredible, though. Yeah.
He does ask for a Coco Bolo desk.
He does.
And he's probably going to get that.
Yep.
Then the switch, Michelle, the name game for this episode, the switch on the wall. Whatever you do, don't switch this switch off. Pulls back the little warning label and switches it off and nothing happens. What do you think that was? What psychological switch did he flip there?
I don't know. I mean, you know, you can always say that was like his switch to being Saul from being Jimmy. I don't know. I don't know what that was. It's like his way of saying, I'm going to do it my way. And even when I do it my way and I go against what I'm told to do, nothing bad happens.
So he switches the switch he's not supposed to ever touch. And he switches it and nothing bad happens. So he can switch to whatever he wants and nothing bad will happen.
Yeah, that's how I took it, you know.
But then he resets it. He resets the switch back to its proper position.
He does.
There's got to be something symbolic there.
Yeah.
Like maybe I can't be Saul right away. Maybe I have to leave it. Maybe I have to ease my way into being a criminal lawyer.
Maybe.
I don't know. Pretty interesting stuff.
But
that's why I think this show has a lot of potential to be like on par with Breaking Bad. I mean, we didn't get these little clever hints in Breaking Bad that I can even remember.
No, I don't think so either.
Or maybe we just know enough now about this, their MO. We know enough to ask these questions or to look for this stuff.
Well, and now we have a history. You know, we have Saul's history. We know where he ends up, and we know some of the stuff that he did. So we're able to see a lot about things that are in his future. You know, we keep looking and going, oh, this is what happened back then, but really this happens before. This is the previous things. So
all right, Michelle, so some last thoughts before we hang up on this episode. How long do you think this series will run?
Can it run longer than 6 years?
I don't think they ever planned it to go 6 years, but I bet that they know how long they want it to run. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they're at the mercy of it having to be quality enough to be renewed. But, you know, they're gonna get it renewed.
Sure.
It's going to be popular for a while. So I bet they're probably saying, like, okay, is it 3 years, 4 years? I bet they have that sketched out on the writer's room wall, that just exactly how long. In fact, they said that when they used these Kens and, you know, these other people that were flashbacks to Breaking Bad, they had the character cards still stuck on the wall in the writing room. So they're like, okay, we got to use this guy again. We got to use this little plot again, you know, because that stuff's all right there on the wall for them.
Well, and see, they ended Breaking Bad like in its pinnacle. They cut it off and they had an ending and an ending date to it. And it was one of the few shows, I think, that's gotten better and better and better almost every season, and then ended just when it was at its best. And I would think that Vince Gilligan would be doing the same thing with Better Call Saul. So surely he's got something played out.
So you hinted at it, Michelle, so I know you're thinking about it. How dark will they dare to get? This is because it was first the premise of this whole thing, it'll be a half hour comedy, and now they say it's 80, I think Odenkirk says it, 80% drama, 20% comedy, or maybe 85 and 15. Mm-hmm. But how dark will they get? We've got Jimmy and Kim relatively happy, and there was no Kim at all in Breaking Bad.
Right.
So how dark? What will happen to them? What will happen to her?
I don't see a gauge with them on the darkness, because like in Breaking Bad, which was of course a different story, but not really.
Can they pull a Jane with Kim, or a God, or like a combo standing on the corner, or Andrea.
Well, I mean, anything, right? Because.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Is this Breaking Bad was never really a comedy. This was kind of a comedy that now looks like it could be a hugely powerful drama.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
What do you think will happen to Jimmy and Kim? What's their separation?
I like to think that it's going to be something gentle, but I really fear that it's not. And I think it might be something that even helps push Saul even more in the direction of being crooked.
You don't want it to be gentle. That's boring.
Some things I want to be gentle, you know? I mean, the relationship between them.
Yeah, I certainly hate to see. Against your own better judgment, you want that.
I just hate to see what I fear is coming to her. Because we know he's still around, and we don't know about her.
All right, Michelle from Tennessee. 202 is Cobbler. That's next week. Maybe Jamie will be back in action. Jamie, we miss you. God, Jamie, yeah. Waited all year to freaking do a podcast with you, and then you can't do the first one.
Well.
So, yeah, we'll be back. Jamie will be back. Michelle, you can come on and guest a couple times.
I'd love to.
How do people find out about Tribal Rant?
Go on tribalrant.com. We're doing The Walking Dead right now, and we're also doing Survivor that starts up, and Fear the Walking Dead will start in just a couple months, so we have all that going on. But I'm on Twitter, at Michelle from TN, and for there or for the West Coast Project, scathing tweets, and my guests sit in for Better Call Saul.
You're a good pinch hitter, Michelle. So this is westcoastproject.com. We're on Facebook and Stitcher and all that. Stitcher was down for a while, too. That was kind of weird. Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. Westcoastproject.com is the place to find everything. And we do have a podcast called Scathing Tweets, but my Twitter is at Scathing Tweets. And so, Michelle, until the next time you guest host on Better Call Saul.
Yep.
I'll see you when the slap gets reinstated.
Oh, no. Or on Scathing Tweets.
Yeah, Scathing Tweets. And what's our next one coming up?
Jeez, I don't even know.
True Detective 2017?
Yeah, maybe. Fargo.
We don't have a summer? We don't have a summer one?
I think we do have something coming up. I think months away.
You're my fall and Jamie's my summer.
Well, I mean, everything got changed this time. Pushed back like Louie. Louie is our spring, and it's not even, as far as I know, in production right now. It's kind of in a holding pattern.
Yeah, so. Halt and Catch Fire. It's usually fall.
Yeah, that's exciting. I'm excited about that.
Hey, I know. Orange is the... never mind. Yeah. Fair is some, like fall, winter.
Yeah, it just ended, really, just a couple months ago, so...
Yep. All right, Michelle. Well, hang in there. Everybody's going to listen to Tribal Rant and love you there.
Oh, hopefully.
All right. Well, talk to you soon.
Okay, Mike.
Bye.
Bye-bye.